We were asked to do the house by a combination of the magazine and the American Plywood Association. So the house had a lot of plywood in it, and it also had, it was excellently presented because they had a team fly out from New York, buy all kinds of goodies, stuff it in the house, and make it look great for shots. But in spite of all that hype, which Edward Newman uses that word, that's the only hype word he has is hype, it's still a good house in spite of all the pressures for it to be other than that. And essentially what it, solar housing, if we take sort of a north exposure, the house and the sun traveling through its daily arc is a three-sided, two-story box. There are some windows in the back side. And like if you're going to do a solar house and you have a beautiful view to the north, I don't think you're going to close it off. I don't think that makes sense. I think you want to temper the principles that we might talk about with a little bit of, you know, common sense. But what we essentially did was we built two walls of glass out here. And it's like thermal paint, you know, two plates of glass, except that they're separated by 12 feet. And this area became what we call the solarium. And in section, the house looked like this. Okay, now this was about, this is poorly drawn, but anyway, this is about 12 feet. This was really closer to about 18 feet, or, well, maybe it was more like 14 feet here. Now, this is solid roof here. This is the south sun coming in like this. This is glass here, and wood framework with glass in between it. And this cutoff, there's windows up here. This was basically living room, dining room, kitchen down here, and powder room, laundry, that kind of thing. Stairway up on the back side. And then bedrooms and study upstairs. And then, let's go into the plan a little bit of this thing. What we did was we packed all the utilitarian things along the back side of the house. Stairway, laundry room, bathroom, the things that don't depend on view. So when you're designing your house or thinking about your house or where you're going to live, pack the things that aren't view essential on the north side. And the living, dining, kitchen are important. Bedrooms are important to have a nice outlook and light and air and so forth. So they're out here looking this way. Okay, now the overhangs here are designed for the Seattle area. And I'd say that if you're in a different area, you need to check the winter and the summer extremes of your sun angles. In Seattle, to cut off the sun from coming in the house in the summertime, that's why we stepped this back here too. This was set at 67 degrees. And in the wintertime, the sun is about 20 degrees. So it comes into the house like that. And it's essential not to let the house be open to the sun in the summertime, in Seattle anyway, and I think most places, because you're just going to cook. And the other thing is that we have ventilation here. There's an attic in this thing, trusses and so forth. We made our insulation in here and along the back wall, the stairway also. Essentially, we've got an insulation box like that. We ventilate out the ends of the gables through a long slit that goes along this whole greenhouse, along this whole thing. So when this thing heats up in the summertime, we can vent it out. In the wintertime, when we want the heat, we take a duct down from the attic. This is ducted right along here. And we put it into a massive storage chamber here. And that mass, when I say massive, I mean rocks is what's in this house in masonry. But you could put it in water, as Judy mentioned to you. It doesn't really matter. There's been some houses that have used barrels of water here. There's been houses that have not so much ducted to something in the ground, but you mentioned the other day where they build a wall behind the glass, a masonry wall, and that's called the Trombay wall after the man who sort of came up with that system in France. But the trouble with the big concrete wall or masonry wall here is that to get it forward enough where it's going to catch the rays of the sun, it's going to block the view too, and then you're going to, it's not quite the same enjoyment living wise.
What, excuse me, when you said there was a slit, what do you mean?
In the framing, let me draw the blow up of this. If this is the roof truss coming down here, like this, this is a 2x4 or so, and this is a 2x4. And here's the framing coming up here with the plate, like that. All right, and here's the sheathing on the roof. It goes over a little ways. Right through here, normally there's blocking in here, but we left that open so that the air could pass up through there. And that is between every joist.
So the whole, whatever the house is, like 35 feet wide or
yeah.
something, from the greenhouse, could go up into the attic
right.
instead of that being blocked off.
Right.
If the 2x4s are like on 16 inches.
Every one of those opens.
Every one of those is an open slot.
Mm-hmm. Now, you can also, the bird mouth, which they have for typical ventilation, sometimes they drill holes in these blocks, which you could use that too. Or you could block every other one, it'd probably be enough. Just so that you don't close it off completely, you know. The other thing is some people, let's draw a little more of that too. We have the greenhouse here, and then the roof here, like this. You might choose to have an operable window here at the greenhouse, which you could have a window supplier if he's, these, you know, in this particular house, it was a wood framed in glass. Now, there are a lot of greenhouse suppliers who will make operable windows for you. And that way, for the ventilation aspect, you could put an operable window in here so that in the summertime, you can get your heat out. But the main thing, of course, the whole idea, the whole thing is the winter time or the fall and the spring when it's cool, when you don't want your heat to leave. So you're going to need some sort of collector up in here to pull the heat off. And what we did was we just used the attic space as a plenum. Plenum, like a big duct. We use the whole space as a duct, like that. And so we let the air. Let me get back to this basic house again. Okay, in diagram, we let the air come up into this space. Now we had a fan and a duct. Fan in that duct, pull it down into this rock box, okay? Then it's available for heating when you need it because you're heating this mass up. And the whole idea is to take the heat that is generated during the day and save it for the night. And the only way you can save it is to put it in a mass of some sort. And so that's the reason for some large collection device. You can use water or rocks, or in this house used rocks, and we had a brick floor in here.
Well, now, so it's just passively heating
mm-hmm.
the greenhouse at night?
Right.
Dwayne, I've always been curious about this. I know it's not a good idea of storing heat in a mass like that, but how does the physics of that work? Is it, if the house is warm, the heat just stays there, right? And when the house cools off, the heat will
there's more to it. We haven't quite got that far yet. But why don't we do that now? Typically you've got a furnace in a house right now. Okay. Now, when your thermostat says you set it for 65 or 68, and it calls on the furnace to turn on. Well, the first thing you would do if you have this setup is you'd call the heat out of here with a fan and a switch. And then once you exhausted this supply, which you probably wouldn't do, then it would switch over to using the petroleum fuel, whether it's oil or natural gas or whatever.
How does that happen? And how does the system know that the mass is cooled?
Because there, you'd put a temperature device in this line, and when that line drops below a certain temperature, then you'd know that you've exhausted the capacity of that to heat. And it's a matter of getting an electrician with a few thermostats and or a good mechanical guy, guy that puts in furnaces all the time, these switches and a few relays, things like that. Now, that's not my field. What we did was we utilized, we didn't even utilize a mechanical engineer on this particular job. We utilized a heating and a ventilating contractor. And he just came up, we said what we wanted, and he just wired it up.
You said there's a ductwork from the attic with a fan in it that simply keeps pushing hot air. It
takes
pushes,
this hot air that's rising here.
Yeah.
It brings it in and stores it in here.
Right. How do you store it? You just have a ductwork?
Just run it into the, say you've got all these rocks in here.
Is it a room with rocks?
It's a box. What we did was, this is the earth here.
Okay,
we dug a trench. It was about 12 feet wide by the length of the house, which was about 36 feet.
And how deep?
It was about 4 feet deep. And we filled it with river rock, just round river rock. And
no cement walls?
Typically, there would be a cement foundation wall here to support this anyway.
Okay.
And so typically, for this loading, typically here, this would just be a crawl space.
But not 4 feet deep?
Depends on your climate. In some climates, the frost line is quite a ways down, so you would push it down. You always want to get the foundation below the frost line. Some areas, like in Seattle, it's 18 inches typically, so it's not that deep, right? And but it varies for different areas. Minnesota, I'm sure it's down there a ways.
Yeah,
4 feet.
4 feet.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, but the idea is just to get the heat. Let's say that we're here. We're bringing heat in like this, and it passes. Actually, you should dump it in at the lower portion of the rocks, like that. So then it's just heating that mass up.
It's just a single duct that comes into a 12 by 36 by 4 feet space.
Yeah.
And just hot air pushed in.
Yeah.
And it just circulates, and the rocks take the heat.
Right.
And how far in did the duct go?
Well, what we did was, now let's draw this trench. This is a plan view of the trench, 36 feet long by 12. We ran the duct through the trench, and we knocked holes in it to sort of spread it out.
Mm-hmm. And then the duct from the furnace came in, how did it come out?
Okay, to come out of here, it just, I'm trying to remember now. I think we took it off at one point in the center. It might have been towards one end, but I don't really remember.
And it didn't have to go in very far at all?
No. Mm-hmm. And then that went to the furnace.
Did the mass also keep the floor of the greenhouse?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's another thing I wanted to point out was that with these walls being pretty solid, your only basic heat loss is the south side. So by virtue of this, this had a brick floor in it and had sand over these rocks. Now, this all night long is also just radiating to this space. So it's making this temperature in here somewhere between what this is and what it is outside. So the house doesn't realize how cold it is outside, you know. And heat loss is a function of the material between the two atmospheres, you know, the air here and the air here. Some materials retard heat loss, others aren't very good, like glass isn't very good at retarding it, but insulation is great. Also, it's also a function not only of the material, but of the difference in temperature. Like if it's minus 60 degrees out here, and it's 70 degrees in here, 130 degree differential, you're just going to pour heat out that. But if it's 65 here and 70 in here, the heat, there's not as much pressure, thermal pressure. So the formula for heat loss is C times delta T, which is the difference in temperature. And then this is a coefficient for heat loss. So, but anyway, what I was trying to say is that if this envelope is fairly well insulated, doesn't have too much glass in it. It can have glass in it, you know, if you've got good views, and it should be double glass. It doesn't have to be triple glass. There's a point of no return. There's a point of no return on insulating, too. You can insulate yourself, actually waste money on insulation. There's some point out here where to add more insulation isn't gaining you much. You know, you're not. You can spend dollars, and the value of it is not increasing that much, or whatever. I got that reversed.
What insulation did you put in the roof?
R19.
What is that?
About 6 inches. Now R23, I think is. I'm not sure if it's R23. Correct me if I'm wrong. Somebody knows. But it comes in like R11. R6, which is hardly ever used anymore, R11, R19, R23, I think, and so forth. Now, like some people are building walls that are typically 2x4s, now they're building them 2x6 walls so that they can stick more insulation in it. I don't see a great advantage to that. It's the wood is a scarce resource. It's a lot of trouble to go to. It does give you a better insulating factor, but I don't know that it's worth the effort. It's more worthwhile going around with a caulking gun, caulking all the cracks. There's as much heat loss due to infiltration as there is through the major surfaces of a wall. I don't think the principle would change, you know.
You put insulation on the ceiling or between the joists up in the attic,
mm-hmm.
but you put none on the roof itself?
Well, that's why I wish I could remember myself exactly how this ducting... I think what we did was we... I'm trying to remember the detail of this, and I don't quite remember how this was ducted off of here, because I don't want to say that we just dump this hot air up into an uninsulated space, because that doesn't make sense. I don't want to convey that. What I want to say is that keep the insulated volume smaller, and a cold attic would do that. Keep the insulated volume smaller in this, and therefore also the volume that you're trying to heat in the wintertime smaller, too. So this ductwork up here has to be insulated, is what I'm saying. But this, yes, if this is uninsulated, then the ductwork wants to be insulated, unless you can pull the ductwork off sooner. You know, it doesn't have to go up here. It could be in some sort of
in the
duct
summer,
right up in here.
In the summer, was there a way in which the attic was vented out?
Yeah, on each end.
Each end,
yeah.
Okay.
That's why we kept it that way. And we also had a fan to pull the air out. So that is it really went out through the end like that. You need it. And we also had drapes in here in the summer, especially the overhead. And we had rigged up some, what's the typical pull-down with the little roller? The little roller, the one that goes up flap, you know. Technical term. And that some came down and then some came up from this point, and then along here we had more.
All right, now what about if you wanted to heat your water? In the winter I can see that's no problem, but what in the summer if you're letting all that hot air, is your water tank in the attic?
Okay. The water tank, let's get back to it.
Were the blinds aluminum or reflective? Or
they were white.
White?
White fabric, and that's all.
They're not special thick or
anything? I think you'd want a little bit of meat to them, you know, not too flimsy, because on that angle, first of all, they need some stiffness. And also, a good heavy drape is good in the winter. Because at night you would also close that too,
yeah,
to keep the heat from radiating out.
It was a shade though, it wasn't a drape that you pulled on the ceiling, right?
Right, it was a shade. Yeah, that's what we were looking for, is a shade.
A fabric shade, or mm-hmm. that issue.
With the spring that takes it back up.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing.
Just, and actually that distance was small enough that...
What is that distance? What?
Well, here, let me try to remember this. I'm going to try to draw this simpler so we get back into sort of the diagram. Okay. This was 12 feet. This was about a 4-foot overhang here. So that was about 8 foot. So we brought some down. And we also had an overhang right here built in. And that was, I think, about 2.6. So we're looking at 8 foot minus 2.6 is 5.6. It wasn't too much here. Another thing that... Now, this could also be done with a one-story house, you know, like if you want to just do like that, and this was had enough headroom here. You might want to pull that up a little bit, like by doing this. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we'll get to your hot water question in a minute. We looked at a one-story house, but it didn't have the appeal that we were after. We also had a very tight lot we were putting it on, and we couldn't get the square footage that we were after on a tight lot with a one-story house. So that's where we went to the two-story. There was also sort of a nice quality to having a higher space here. Some of the uses of this space, we had a sink out here. One end of it we had a counter with a sink and a place to pot plants and things like that. We had some beams running out here, because this load coming down here about every 12 feet. And because of that, we got some lighting between there and had some nice lighting down out there at nighttime. And also we put some plants up here, so we had some nice, a nice living quality. We strung a hammock between a couple of them, things like that, you know, for just a lot of fun space. And actually, I was thinking of a playroom. That's one reason I was going to see if Judy came, to see what she was thinking of uses for this space. I think it's important to recognize the limited uses that can occur here, because if you, in the wintertime when you want the heat, you don't want to let it all out to make this more habitable, because you want this to run hot. You want it to run like 90 degrees or so. And that's something you need to recognize, that this space runs hot, and you want it to, because if you cool it all down, then you've lost what you're trying to get. And yet, you can see through it from the inner house here. You can see through this space.
So the house can be shut off from that greenhouse completely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had another row of drapes here. Mm-hmm. We had sliding doors. Actually, we had like three sliding doors out of here and three sliding doors out here. They were all right in line with each other. So on a nice day, you know, the thing could just be like a patio. And that's the way it works. Mm-hmm. Then we even included some more mats out here, just to extend that space, more of a visual thing.
Hot water.
Right. Now, could you ask the question again?
Well, where is your hot water tank?
Okay. We didn't, this particular house, we didn't heat our hot water. We had a different system. Let me describe. Well, let's answer your question, then we'll describe the system we had there. If we had a hot water tank back here, but it was heated conventionally. Now, if you wanted to heat your hot water, what you would do, you could place your hot water tank near this to minimize line loss. Let's put our tank, our rock storage back in here.
Yeah, but you said your bathroom's worth the north end of the house.
Right, but it'd be easier to heat the water in one mass and keep it here and then ship the water by pipes over to the bathroom. If we put the tank here, this is just, you know, extrapolation. This isn't what we did. You could run a heat exchanger through here, like that, to heat your water, preheat your water.
Except you said in the summertime you're shipping all the air out through the attic.
Yeah. If you brought it up here, you have the choice of bringing it down here, right? You could also bring it down to a heat exchanger for your hot water and then dump it. It wouldn't have to be dumped up here. It could be dumped down here at a ground vent somewhere near the end of the house.
Could it be in the attic?
The hot water tank? Mm-hmm. Sure. We do that a lot in apartment projects where we don't have any space for them. The hot water tank.
In the summer.
Yeah, you could put the hot water tank up here, get the heat through an exchanger, which they have packages for that, and then dump the excess heat once you've done. Also, if you put collectors on the roof, which you could add to this package easily, then they have a hot water package where they run this hot water through an exchanger and back and heat the hot water that way. So you could add I think you could heat hot water with two panels or four panels about 2 by 4 feet, which would be on the roof of the house, probably.
You know. Why don't you say what, there wasn't anyone else here when you started. The companies that make this sound complicated and that you need their technology, but the company that has one nice valve that is, just go through that again.
Okay, what I was trying to say was I think it's, some of the sources of information about this are Sunset has a book out on solar heating, which is a real good one. And Mechanics Illustrated, I haven't seen anything by them, but I would bet you my boots that they have put out a book on it. These sources are, available to everybody, and they explain it in a reasonable way. They show how-to aspects of it, which are not very difficult. They would be for me because I'm such a flub at little things, like that, but... I think, for anybody that's sort of a handy man or woman, they could do it. And but what I was trying to say to John before the meeting got started was that the big companies like Washington Natural Gas here in Washington is marketing heavily solar products. And Solaron is another company in the U.S. that is marketing heavily solar products. And they make it sound complex and if you will give them your house requirements, they will solve it in their little black box somehow. And it's not that much of a deal for them to do it. They run through a few numbers on heat loss. They figure out how much energy that you need. Then the panels have a basic output for so many square feet, and they just match that output with your need. And that's their big formula, Some of them do make good parts. Some of these solar packages are nice. They're nice little parts, and if you don't have a lot of time to invent, you don't have a shop and so forth, the things will pay off in 5 years. So it's not a bad investment, even if you don't want to do it yourself. And I'm sure with fuel going up, they'll pay off a lot sooner than that in the very near future. But like I was mentioning, John, the Solaron company makes a little valve, for a hot air system like this, where sometimes you might want to... you might want it to come down here, you might want it to go outside. Well, they make a little valve with a little sensor on it. The air in or out, and take your choice. I think I got this on the wrong side here. Anyway, that little package they'll sell separately, So you can find little parts that you can use from their systems and yet not be maybe tied down to their whole system. It might be valuable to recognize that. I did have a few other things that I... Oh, I want to mention to you how we did the hot water here. we used, typical water pipes are like a half inch or so in a house. We used extremely small copper tubing, which is it's another system that somebody's making. And the water is, there's only a hot water. No, that's not right.
How much smaller than a half inch?
It was like a quarter of an inch. And it was under high pressure. I'm trying to think of the name of the company. The thing that was interesting about it was you weren't I guess I won't waste your time on it, but it was sort of fascinating because you weren't heating the whole line every time with, waiting for all that cold water. You would just shoot out, I think I'll better block that.
Cause in the pipe until
there was such a small quantity that you weren't, you know, using a lot of hot water to heat the pipe. It was more useful. One in our office that we have, you may have seen them there. They sit next to the sink or right with the sink, and they have a little hot water tank. Here's the counter. And you just press down on that and you get instant hot water. And the heating takes place here, right at the faucet, which is another way of not heating 20 gallons of water for instant use, you know. Yeah. I did try to stress this one thing here, that this environment becomes sort of a benign intermediary between the outside and the inside. I think that could work in a lot of your plants, if keeping that in mind. The other thing is that this was single pane and this was single pane. So the two of them were thermal pane, just separated by 12 feet. Now you could go to double glass at either one, but we didn't find it necessary in Seattle.
Triple pane now also?
Yeah.
Where is it on the curve?
No, I'm not sure exactly, but I think it's on the flat part.
What about humidity in the greenhouse, if you were going to raise vegetables and so forth?
I don't know. That's one reason I was hoping Judy would be here with that article from Sunset, because I'm concerned about humidity and dumping a lot of humidity into your house, what you're going to do with it. I was also concerned, you're talking about West Virginia, right? And that's a very, isn't that humid in the summer?
Well, we're at 3,200 feet, so it's not
a problem.
No.
Okay. I don't know in the real humid, you know, like I was mentioning to you, the man that drove the snowplow down this morning, he's wondering about Spokane and so forth. And we've found that the more northerly latitudes are somewhat better for solar heating, because you don't have the cooling problem that they have in California, Arizona, Florida, etc. Where you think of solar, sometimes you almost automatically think of those southern regions, but that's not necessarily true, because they have such a cooling problem. And what do you do about cooling?
You have more of a differential to sun angle.
It might be. I'm not sure, Karn. I just, you know, the essential thing is that the sort of the tricks of keeping the sun in the summertime for a cooling situation have been ignored for the last 50 years since we were so energy abundant and so forth. There's totally glass buildings and things like that. No shade trees, no overhangs, no screening, all kinds of things that just ignored what our forefathers did, because they didn't have this luxury that we've wasted.
How much of a factor is cloud cover? And in Minnesota, we probably have, in the winter months, probably have more clear skies and direct sunlight than some areas like this.
Omer McDinn, who's the principal in our firm, has done some numbers for Minnesota and some for Seattle and some for different regions. And he's found us we're better off here. And it's because you're so cold. You know, more so, I think, than cloud cover. There is solar heating that occurs on a cloud cover type day. There's a lot of diffusion. I know if you know how sunburned you've gotten on an overcast day sometimes. And
what about here, though, with the mountain actually?
Yeah, I think you... I really wonder how... I think it's a problem here. I'm not positive. I thought when I got back to the office, I'd do some thinking and checking on it. Maybe let you know. Let's see. I had some other... one other thought here I think I want to leave you with. Not leave you with that thought, but just a thought to have. is that if this is a wall and there's a person standing here, I'll just put him in the house. It'd be a lot easier.
Or here.
You think, you know, sometimes turn up the temperature to get more comfort, to heat the air. And it's been found that you're about twice as much, you're more sensitive to surface temperature than you are to air temperature. So radiant heating, like wall panels, some of these, there are some gypsum board heating systems where you can put it in the ceiling or whatever. If you had even a thermal mass here, not that it would work back here, but say it were here, your body is radiating to a cold mass or is picking up radiation from a warm mass. But you have to really run up the air temperature to get the same comfort that you get from a decent wall surface temperature. Just something that I thought I'd point out.
I would say the outer walls, especially say on the north side, should be very well insulated.
Right. One thing we talked about all this ventilation up this way. I think it makes good sense to get some ventilation through the house on horizontal too. So you need some windows, and it's also, you know, if I could stress anything, I would stress moderation. Don't live in a hole in the ground or a dark, damp box because you think it has to be. I think these things work in normal frame houses, facing it to the south, and reasonable measures. You know, I don't think we have to be unreasonable to make the thing work.
The one thing that, if we can move to anything else, almost everybody here is thinking of some existing house, maybe not facing south.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't incorporate that angle, sun, 12-foot space. Does this thing, sure, with alchemy, or does it make sense to somehow add a greenhouse?
I think so. Let's just take some different examples. We take, north is up, and let's take a typical street. Here's another street over here, and here's some lots. And here's, you know, maybe one cul-de-sac here, and here, maybe you live on the next street over, something like that. Maybe your house is facing south like that, in your garage here, whatever. Maybe another person's house is facing that way, garage beside it. Maybe it makes sense to create a space off of your garage or something like that with the glass and the storage right there, and then ship the heat over to the house. It doesn't have to be right there. It could be remote, you know. Maybe these are bedrooms in the typical living room, dining room, kitchen looking out on the street. Maybe you add a playroom, something like that. You know, punch through one room and maybe lose it to become a family room or something, one of the bedrooms. Maybe you have a house here that's surrounded by, and I'm drawing deciduous or evergreen trees, and it's just always in the shade and you love these trees. Well, maybe you're going to have to build something that's remote and bring the heat in where the sun can get to it. You know? But what you need is some sort of collector, and then the getting it into the house, or maybe you just put something on the roof, you know.
What sort of ducting would you use to get the heat from a remote thing?
I'd like to keep the distance as short as possible, but I think I'd just use maybe some fiberglass or metal duct. Fiberglass is really good buried in the ground because it can stand some, you know, earth over the top of it. We use that in some slab work that we do in supermarkets and things where we get a lot of weight over the top of it. But you get it down a ways, it doesn't matter what you put over it. You know, it's got some earth sort of arching over it.
So the just convection?
No, fan. It'd have to be fan.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what I would suggest is that if you're for your own particular area, you find somebody, just do a little reading around and find somebody in your area that's been working on it and talk to them and see what's worked for them and what's available, you know, supply-wise. And if there's, now like for instance, Mel and I, Missus in Seattle, we really wanted to go to it. There was recently a urban homestead open house. This one couple had spent the last 6 months experimenting with lifestyle and just seeing different things they could do. And I don't know if there's anything like that in your own hometowns, but we plan to write these people and see if we can talk to them before the next open house, which is in March. But I think that, you know, it's kind of exciting to me, and I hope what doesn't happen is people become so dependent on somebody else to do it for them. It does take a little investigation and so forth.
What if you had an eastern exposure with just, I mean, does it really have to be southern?
You can vary like 15 degrees either way, you know, but you start getting too much off. See, like some people will say, well, let's face it, a little bit to the east. So you can pick up the morning sun for breakfast in a nice part of the morning. And I have no argument with that. But what if you have a slightly west view? You might want to twist it to the west a little bit, you know. That's why I say it has to be tempered with the situation, the lot that you have, and if you have a view. Maybe have some nice side amenity, like some nice trees or a stream or something like that that you want to be part of your house.
Would you sketch on the board an ordinary one-story house and the principle of adding this greenhouse situation up front, like what would take the place of the
living, dining, that sort of the normal living area that faces the street?
Yeah. Okay. Like, where would you store
the heat?
Where would you pull it up to?
Okay, in section, more or less.
Right.
Is that right? Okay.
Could you do that?
Yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Let's save one of our lots.
Is that what you have? Do you have slab construction?
No.
Okay, now your house faces east?
What?
Your house faces east?
No.
South. Okay, so the major roof line faces south. Where is your street? Or where are your living areas? To the east? Okay, living room faces south. Dining room faces south. Okay, and then what was the question then? If you wanted to put it on the east, what would you do?
No, if you wanted the greenhouse, you wanted on the south, but the house is already built.
Okay.
I have no
attic. Okay. Just the eight like that.
Flat
roof, okay. Wow. Okay.
Alright.
And you have rooms back here too, right?
The kitchen.
Okay.
Alright. I guess what you could do would be to just carry on the lines like so. You get a little bit of an overhang. Cut off your, you need to find out the, like here it's 67 degrees is the summer sun. And you, actually I should drop one like that. You'd want to stop that before it gets in the house. Oh. And then you'd want to, because that doesn't want to get in and heat you up in the summer. And then this overhang doesn't necessarily have to be solid either. It could be like a louver or sort of thing. You know, so you can get some air movement close to the window wall here. And then the other thing was you check out your summer angle. Or excuse me, your winter angle, and you'd want to get that in as far as you can. This could be like masonry or slab on grade. Could be like exposed aggregate patio or something like that. Then your rock box could be there, like so. Now, what are you going to do with the rising heat? You could create Let's see now. Trying to be nice to your neighbors. That's one thing that really is important, I think, is to try to do something that's, you know, pleasant. You want to live with it, and so do your neighbors. And that's one reason solar has a black eye, is because some of the claptrap that's gone up has been pretty bad to look at, you know. Yeah, I keep wanting to pitch your roof, yeah.
Well, would that be so bad to build a roof on the whole thing?
No, it wouldn't. But I'm trying to eliminate his cost of re-roofing the whole thing.
I'm going to dock.
A which?
I'm dock to
it. Yeah, you could. You know, the heat is going to rise here and it's going to stratify like this in the top here. So you could just put a duct here and pull it off like that, right in the same space. You could let it stratify within the room.
You duct it right down to the rock underneath?
Right, straight down. It could be right in one end. As a matter of fact, we draw a plan view. Let's draw just this room here and just part of it. Say the duct is running along the top here and it's got some holes in it. Okay, to pick up the heat. And then at each end, it's got a fan. Matter of fact, we wouldn't even need the deck. We'd just put a fan on the end wall, probably.
What is that you're drawing? Okay. That box or that rectangle?
Let's look at the view, the room in perspective. Like that. You could probably put a grill on the end wall, like so, and you're going to have studs here on the end. You could probably draw it down right into the rock box through this grill. Maybe there's one on each end. And then that could be a fairly pleasant element in the room. Wouldn't look too mechanical, you know, sort of a solid thing. Could even have a nice wood grill on it, you know, the full width of the room, and pull it down in between. What I would do, though, if you look at this wall in detail, here's the wall. This whole thing could actually be a duct, or it could be as wide as you need it. I'm not sure how wide it needs to be, but then I'd build a wall on the outside of it, I think, now that I think about it a little bit. Here's a normal wall. This is the inside here.
This is a plan view again.
Right, plan view, little section through there.
Yeah.
That way you keep your envelope here and the duct isn't on the outside getting cold.
Yeah.
Right. And then maybe, you know, I'm not sure how wide it has to be. It probably doesn't have to be as big as all that. But just put it on the end of the room and duct down.
And in the summer you duct out or what?
Right. You could come down to the bottom of the wall
and
duct, or just right at the top. Let's look at the end of that now. Let's draw the whole room here. Here's the slab. Here's the rocks underneath it. Here's Don. Sorry, Don.
Dan.
Dan, sorry. Double sorry. Okay.
He kind of holds his head to one side.
Okay. And here's your roof up here. And now the air is stratified up here. Okay. You duck down like this into the rocks. In the summertime, you can just put your fan, a little valve in there, just blow it out the end. Also, you can open the doors, you know.
Where's the best spot for a fan for pulling hot air down? Do you want it under the floor? Down there near the
rock? I'm not quite sure. You're going to need access for maintenance and so forth, so I think you're going to probably want it somewhere where it's easy to get to. You know, maybe you build some sort of cabinet here. I don't know. You might even build a whole little room, narrow closet on the end to do all this stuff, so it's out of sight. You still have your grill.
Will the mass of rocks underground have any effect toward cooling in the summer? What is the effect of a brick floor with 4 feet of rocks underneath it, if you've diverted your hot air, is it a cooling effect at all?
I think it could be, especially if you ran, say you ran a cooler night air through your rocks, and you reverse it. Then you get a thermal cycle the other way, where you run your cool air through the rocks at night. Then during the daytime, run the fan through the rocks and run this cold air out of the rock box.
I read an article on the exact, the perfect thickness of the old Native American adobe.
7 foot, that.
That whole business of night and day and heat and cooling was just...
I was going to mention that. That is really... That's the essence of what we're talking about is, here's the old adobe wall. All day long the sun beat on this wall. Okay, and there are people are in here under their pole and mud roof and so forth. Okay, the heat never got to them. It was working its way through this wall all day long. Then at night, sun goes down and this wall is really cold. Well, then the wall starts to radiate both ways, but it's radiating this way also. So this warm wall is heating this space all night long. And then by the time it just runs out of heat, the sun, the morning sun hits it again. And that's all, this really, this thing represents a mass. And all we're doing is we're taking that mass and putting it in the ground so that we can see, because we're not quite as up to looking out a small little windows yet.
What about a brick and concrete as opposed to adobe? How thick do those walls have to be?
I don't know what the sizes have to be exactly. Yeah, I just don't know. And I think that's another thing, you know, like you could go through the thing, probably with physics and calculate, you know, the energy that you could get into those rocks and how much you'd, you know, but I think it'd be easier to come to the answer experimentally. And that's why I suggest that you talk to people who have done that kind of thing around there and see what's worked for them. We did a house for Washington Natural Gas too, which was solar panels and passive both. We had solar panels on the front of the house. It had the front of the house was sort of, or the south, this wasn't the front, but the south face was like this. We had solar panels here. And then we had a deck and so forth, and a deck, so forth, and there was more living down here. And these were glass windows, so these acted like passive, and this part acted like active. And in this particular house, the rock box was about 8 foot by 8 foot by 8 foot. And it stored both the active and the passive. And Boeing and NASA are monitoring this house. The one that I described, the two-story, the simpler one, that's not complex, is not being monitored. A guy bought it, he wanted a solar house, but we haven't heard of him. You know, he sort of just wanted a solar house and he didn't want to talk to anybody, you know. It probably should have been a condition of the sale that we got some monitoring information out of it, but the magazine got what they wanted, so they and they paid for it, so they sold it.
how much would it cost to build the house that you designed? And that's one question. The other is, how much more would it be than a conventional house of the same square feet? Could it be more?
Well, looking at that little house again.
How many square feet was it?
It was about 1,200 square feet. Okay. Let me say something I forgot to say first. Is that if you didn't put this greenhouse on here at all, this house still works pretty good as a good house in terms of overhangs to prevent the summer buildup and also south sun coming in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. And a south window is a net gainer throughout the year. And you can close your drapes at night. So in that aspect, it wouldn't cost you any more to orient your house correctly and pull your drapes at night. To add this solarium here, building costs are changing so much. This whole house cost $50,000 to build. Okay, and it was 1,200 square feet. So what does that give us? $40 a square foot. And that was a couple of years ago, you know, and I don't know what the prices are in Minnesota.
So, and others, it probably wouldn't cost any more than a conventional
I think it...
Does the 1,200 square feet include the solarium?
Yes, it did.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. But in the long run, the price of energy probably is a cheaper house.
I think so. I wish I had known I was going to do this, because we've done some figuring on the economics of it, and I can only tell you, talking to our leader, Mr. Mathun, that he did some takeoffs on the advantages of going solar, you know, economics-wise, and it was phenomenal. It really does pay, you know, especially with
the fuel prices. The question I had with the housing industry is about where the American automobile industry was 10 years ago, just continuing to build energy inefficient houses. And when will this change come where mass produced houses will be using these principles? Is that coming? Or is it?
I think more and more people are interested in it. Like I mentioned at this discussion we had the other night, we're doing a project in Renton. Near Charlie Mays, really. And let's see, south is, well, I'll draw it, let's put north this way. We have a piece of property that looks like this. Something like that. This is a valley up here. And we have a bunch of ridge sites here. Okay, they don't, and it's heavily treed. They have a beautiful view here. So the builder is not going to do solar there. Here he's got a power line running through about 150 feet wide, 200 feet wide. We're thinking, we suggested to him that it might be a good application to do solar homes along here. It would give him the advantage of saying these homes have something unique and special about them to help them sell next to a power line. And
they have a beautiful power line.
Well, they you know. Pardon?
They can also view some very pretty
plants. Yeah, and the other thing is we're gonna put a little buffer zone along here with and leave some, but it's an opportunity there. But you know, our we enter this thing. We have a loop road that goes like this and a little string out like that, and we're building houses on both sides of this. Well, some of these might be pretty good for solar, right here on the south side of this road, and some of these over here. But it doesn't work in all locations, you know. You can force it, you know. Every home could follow the principles of keeping those three walls that are not south fairly solid. If you have a nice view, you're going to cut out a hole to see it, you know. And trying to maximize the south-facing glass. I think that could happen pretty easily. It would save a lot of energy. But I think the building industry is worse than the auto industry because it's not contained in so few of hands. If the auto industry decided to get together and do something, they could do it. Like you remember how in World War II, when they were called upon to turn to a different kind of production, they did it in a relatively short time because this control was centralized. I'm not in favor of centralized control. It scares me to death. But, you know, the building industry is so fragmented. Unions are so powerful. And also, they're even fragmented that I think what will happen will be a word of mouth, an example, and it will be a slower evolution. That's all I can. I don't know.
Another place to get some information is from the universities or state schools. I was recently in Phoenix, and the State Energy Commission or somebody asked the Arizona State University to design a do-it-yourself hot water project. Mm-hmm. In other words, for somebody that is talented enough just to, say, tune up a car or something, right, design a package for that homeowner to put on the roof or whatever, a unit to heat the water. Mm-hmm. And it had to be under $500. So the architectural students at the University at Arizona State did it. They did it for $340. And then they had a 4-hour class. And you signed up to take the class. Mm-hmm. And then all they gave you during that 4 hours was a list of materials and how to put it together. Mm-hmm. And I stayed in a home with some people who were doing it. And it was a very simple project.
Yeah. And I think that
really didn't amount to very much. And the school was doing it. And I would think probably that all the other schools of architecture in our area here are probably offering similar things.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because I hadn't thought of that, and that is excellent. I bet that is a tremendous source wherever you live, is to go to the university there and check with the engineering or the architecture departments, because the engineers are just as interested in it too.
This is just a very small example of sort of the attitudes I think that we're facing too in the country. Just last week when John mentioned he didn't know how many people would come, we'd be here at Christmas next year because we're going to cut down our diesel use and so on. That very morning about 30 people came down the registration desk to make reservations for next Christmas. And we said, literally that many people, wasn't it, Marilyn?
And after I said that?
After you said that. And we said, and we talked to, especially one lady we were talking to, and she said, oh, that's too, we said, well, we're not taking reservations yet for next Christmas. We don't know what we're going to do, and it's too soon. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's too bad. What can we do about it? And we, you know, we just had to get ready. And explained the electricity and everything. Well, why don't you just charge enough money so that you can use the diesel fuel to heat that building during that time so that the people pay for it?
Addicts to convenience.
Yeah, it's just a matter of, and we said, well, it's not just the money, it's that we want to conserve the energy, the fuel. But it's just that, well, if I can pay for it, I'm going to have it, no matter how much it costs.
I remember when I was going to school, it was during the first energy crisis, and I was commuting a ways, and I was praying that I would get through school before the final crunch came, you know. Because I don't know what I would have done. And I think we just need to, now that I'm out, I sort of feel that it's my turn to put that gas back in the line somehow that I used to get my education.
I was just wondering, for how long have architectural schools been teaching these kinds of principles? Is it pretty recent?
Well, Omer Mathun is a professor at the University of Washington, and our firm is like, there's three principals, he's one of them, and then there's four associates, which I'm one, and then there's about 30 people. He is the only one that I know of at the university that really consistently gives design problems using solar principles. He gives talks around the country, and I thought maybe I could talk him into doing something, putting something together that could be used by you people. For presentations. I think it's coming. I think every, you know, like what you were mentioning, Becky. No, I think it's getting there. I think you'd find very few schools that aren't interested in it. You know, and I think that the generation of people who are going to have the information is coming out of school right now.